You're tuning to Jazz 88. I'm talking with Greg Bryant. He's a fellow jazz broadcaster, but today we're talking about his fruitful career as a musician. He's the bassist for Concurrence, a duo that started in 2017 in Greg's hometown in Nashville. The other member of Concurrence is pianist Paul Horton. Concurrence recently released a project titled Indivisible. Greg, thank you so much for joining Jazz 88, and big congratulations to you on the new release.
Oh, Sean, it's a pleasure to be here, man. Got great memories of Minneapolis. Really quickly, the last time I was there was like 9 years ago, and I hope we come back soon for sure. But we played the Dakota. I was in this Soul Review at the time. The Soul of the Blues tour was put on by Ted Curlin, basically, and we got to play with Eric Krasno, Irma Thomas, Lee Fields. We were at the Dakota, and a friend of mine that worked there at the time says, "You wouldn't be nervous if Prince happened to show up, would you?" It's like, no, it would be an honor. And she just winked her eye, and I was like, They were partitioning the balcony, and literally about 30 minutes into the set, our organ player, who was right next to me, "Man, that's Prince up there." I was like, "Man, chill out, man. Just play. So it was a real honor to be up there in a really special time. I think he passed away maybe 7-8 months after that, something like that. But just to know that he was a supporter of the scene across all types of music was really hip. So I hope to come back to the Dakota, and I hope to come back to Minneapolis. You guys have a lot going on that's just great.
Well, we would love to have you back. We welcome you with open arms, especially considering this really impressive project, Indivisible. So this project is an amazing job of telling a powerful and a painful story. Tell it through instrumental music, spoken word, and more. I feel like you and Paul are using the whole toolkit to really communicate this story of the impact of Interstate 40 cutting directly through the heart of Black Nashville. Now, Greg, you grew up in Nashville in the aftermath of Interstate 40, and I can imagine that would give you a lot of impressions as a youngster and also as a grown man. But what prompted you to want to explore that story musically as opposed to just, you know, going down and looking at the microfiche and thinking about it? What made you want to put a musical face to it?
Sure. Well, like Nina Simone said, and I'm paraphrasing the quote, it's an artist's responsibility to reflect their environment and the times. So essentially, growing up, as you mentioned earlier, we were kind of second generation survivors of this phenomena. So I would always wonder as a kid, man, why are our areas so dilapidated? And everyone talks about the yesteryear and the lore of, you know, 20 years before I even got on this planet. So the wheels were turning for many years. And then when Paul and I decided to do our second full-length album, we were kind of on the drawing board around 2017, 2018. What's the new record going to be about? That was the question. And Paul actually hit on the idea. We had exposed him to this history of folks like Jimi Hendrix cutting his teeth in Nashville in the 1960s before he moved to New York and then to London, England to blow up. Folks like Ray Charles, who poached Hank Crawford from Tennessee State University and got him into his big band to become a national recording artist. Local names like Ironing Board Sam, who basically traveled the Chitlin circuit, for years, ended up in Louisiana, I believe, but cut his teeth in Nashville. Ben Tucker, the bassist you hear with Herbie Mann and Grant Green and Kenny Burrell in the early 1960s on Blue Note, you know, he was born in Brentwood, Tennessee, left for New York City, and then settled in Savannah, Georgia to own his own radio station. So there's these pockets of greatness that we had heard about, me all my life, Paul, since he moved to Nashville in the early 2000s, and we decided, look, man, we were the last cats to play in that area of town before it was gentrified. So we're kind of the last generation, you know, humbly I say that, because the people I mentioned are heroes, you know, but if we can represent them and our city in a way that's off the beaten path, not so country, if you will, people are waking up to the fact that this not only happened in Nashville, but there are hidden histories just like this in Minneapolis, in Chicago, in Miami, in New York City even. The interstates did a lot of good for commerce and travel, but they wreaked havoc on Black and brown neighborhoods, and we have to let people know the science of the construction and the ramifications of it.
Well, we are so glad that you have done that in a musical setting, because the truth is, on a jazz station, if you had just written a book about it, I might not be reaching out and connecting. But hearing these stories that involve a little bit of maybe a celebration of the heyday, a little bit of a looking forward, but also telling the tragedy of seeing, I mean, I'm much more familiar with what happened with I-94 in St. Paul and the Rondo neighborhood, which was a thriving black neighborhood and is a thriving black neighborhood now, but it's against all odds because suddenly to walk to the grocery store that used to take 3 minutes now takes 15 minutes because you got to go, mm-hmm. you understand a little bit of that science. My question for you about that is, as you and Paul are working on this album, how are you working out those ratios of telling some of the painful stories, telling some of the joyous stories of yesteryear, talking about nightclubs and places that are really happening, and also looking to the future for what the next generation of Nashville musicians will bring?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I don't know if I've actually done tune to tune, side by side, how much of the story is about the past and how much of the story is about the present or future. But one of our heroes in this great comprehensive music of ours is J Dilla. And on his record, Donuts, he basically started the record at the end and ended the record at the beginning. If you listen to that record, it's basically sequenced backwards, if you will. But there's still a story there. So we did not attempt to tell the story in a linear fashion, but we wanted to make sure we touched on, as you said, the heyday. As you said, the feelings of optimism. One of the tunes is "What Could Have Been Still Can Be." And we're also on there in A Study in Resistance, talking about some of the state legislature's, mission to roll things back 40 years, and some very young, sprightly, energetic African Americans who have been unlawfully prosecuted in that state situation, but are still freedom fighters in the truest sense of what that means. So, as you're alluding to, Sean, it was important for us not to make this a historical document or just about history. We're weaving that situation of government interference in black life and how folks have been resilient despite that. And I think it's pretty centered, to answer your question, although I haven't done a side-by-side, track-to-track, how much is about this past and how much is about the present. But I think we did the best job that we could of weaving the story in some sort of a line that happens not to be linear.
Well, Greg, I'll tip my hat to you. I didn't do any, mathematical ratios either. But as I ran the record down last night after I got off my shift, I was sort of thinking this is really even-handed in how it's celebrating the past and looking forward. And also, frankly, establishing, and in the way you already have in this interview, the fact that Nashville has a really rich black music history, because so many times Nashville gets reduced to country music. And that's it. Mm-hmm. That's not what I've experienced when I've been in Nashville. That's not what I've experienced when I've read liner notes. But to actually underline the fact that there is and was a thriving black music scene going hand in hand in Nashville I just think it's a really important part of a story, because Nashville is elevated as a musical city, but we want to make sure that it's elevated for everything it is musically.
That's right, Sean. Absolutely, man. And it's interesting to really release this project now when eyes and attention are headed towards there, in cities like Atlanta and cities like Raleigh-Durham in North Carolina, folks making the migration from the Central Plains and the East Coast, sometimes West Coast and Midwest, to relocate to the South. The affordability, a good place to raise families, all of that stuff is true. But very much like the past, unfortunately, Paul and I found ourselves really struggling and scraping, while we were there. People knew us, but when we would approach, the majority festivals, if you will, there, hey, we play in bands that you guys hire, like Brittany Howard, like the McCrary Sisters, the Dynamites. Can we put concurrence on your festival? Crickets. And it's just like, where is the home for what we do? Yeah, there are some really hip clubs that are sticking it out, like Rudy's Jazz Room, like the Nashville Jazz Workshop. But to have a real, like you say, comprehensive musical scene where things are evenly supported, oftentimes folks like us have to find our fortune elsewhere. And I'm not just speaking about money, I'm speaking about audience and creative stimulus.
I'm chatting with Greg Bryant. He is one half of Concurrence, a duo that started out in Nashville. The other member is pianist Paul Horton. Greg, I want to back up a little bit. We've been talking about Indivisible. It's not every jazz group that goes, what should our next record be about? Because a lot of jazz groups, no offense to them, just sort of go, what charts do you have? What charts do I have? Let's put them down. Let's get the best players we can. And let's take a picture of us in front of a mixing board. And boom, we got a record. So tell me, what makes you and Paul's work more sort of subject-driven and project-driven compared to a lot of jazz artists?
Well, I really don't want to, you know, pass the buck on anybody or put anybody down, because some of those albums that you kind of explained, we're both fans. Sean and I are both fans of them. I think it really matters on your personal conviction. And as Herbie Hancock said a long time ago, there's room. There is room. So if you basically pick up a record on label X, that's a more straight ahead situation, and they want to, you know, show their wares on the standards of the 40s and 50s, you know, or 70s and 80s for that matter, cool with me. Yeah. If someone is more conceptual and says, hey man, we want to make sure that if a person is really curious about our sound, understand that it's multi-layered. There's a message in this music. Maybe heavier, maybe lighter, somewhere in the middle. I think it really takes all kinds to make this music healthy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I agree with you. And yes, I'm certainly not trying to throw anybody who's pulling the standards under the bus, because it's an important part of the story. It's an essential part of the story. But so is your work. And I really do want to underline that. And I really appreciate what you and Paul have done on this record. Now, the tune that we're adding into rotation on Jazz 88 is called Nightcap at Brown's Dinner Club. That has you and Paul on it, as well as Nasheed Waits, who is a joy. I saw him recently with Christian McBride. He sounds so great on this tune. And one reason I picked this tune, Greg, is because I feel like it has a lot of the whole story in the one song. So there's the A section is kind of stormy and epic, but in the B section and some of the solo section, there's a little more lifting and grooving. I don't know what Brown's Dinner Club is, and I'd love to know more about that and as well about the recording and the writing of the tune.
That's very interesting, and I appreciate that comprehensive question, Sean. Tune-wise, let me start there. Essentially, Paul had reharmonized, rearranged the tune from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Pure Imagination. The melody was still there, but the chords, the harmonies were completely different. And we were playing that for quite a while. And I remember actually leaning over to Paul one day, just kind of casually, and saying, hey, man, as much as you've done to this, man, this is ours. And I just kind of smirked a little bit and went on about it. When it came time for the record, though, he had written a different melody, if you will. So completely the tune is just fresh. It's really not that at all. Rhythmically, we kind of allude to it a little bit at one point, but very little. So we have basically an organic composition, you know, like Mingus and Wayne Shorter, you know, compositions are organisms. That's what they said. And you could see that in their work as certain tunes developed and took on their own character. Brown's Dinner Club was basically the premier hotel and entertainment spot on Jefferson Street in North Nashville, in the African-American district, if you will, the black district. My grandfather said that he saw Duke Ellington there playing matinee. Of all places, before they went to the big ballroom, they were holed up at the hotel on a Sunday. They had a matinee situation, and that's where my grandfather got to experience Duke Ellington in the late 1930s, going into the 40s, right before the war. So Brown's was there for many years. I talked to my dad about it. He's like, yeah, man, it was just a shell of a building by the time the late 60s, early 70s came, but the building was still there. And as a matter of fact, Sean, the main gig that Paul and I had on Jefferson Street when we were first forming Concurrence about a year out was maybe a block and a half away from where Brown's set. So it's sentimental to us. We never saw the building right in our lifetime, but to be across from that corner, we're still exchanging in that energy. So that's a bit of a background about the tune. Nasheed Waites, we first played with him about 11 years ago. We brought him to Nashville to play with us when we were first forming our thing plus drums. We started out as a piano and bass duo. It was like, man, we got to have drums. So we would just use different cats in town who we felt like had the spirit of what we were trying to do. And on our bucket list was Nasheed Waites. Lo and behold, he has family about 45 minutes away from Nashville, who he was in town to visit, we find out. And he agreed to play with us, and it totally transformed us. You know how he plays. You can hear some of it on that track. But it was a real honor to have him on four songs on this record. And I'm sure we'll do some more. Nasheed has been a big brother to us in many ways. So that's a little bit about Browns from the Concurrent side.
This is such a joy to talk to Greg Bryant, bass player for Concurrents, a group that is doing really inspiring work and also educational work. I think a lot of times if you hear educational, you go, oh, is this record going to be no fun? This record is way fun. Like, I just want to be real clear with you about that. But I did walk away learning about the impact of I-40 in Nashville. And I did also walk away reflecting on the impact of I-94 in Rondo in St. Paul. And it all started from the great music that you and Paul Horton put together for this record, Indivisible, with Concurrents. I know you got designs on coming back to Minneapolis when that permits. Anything else on the horizon for Concurrents after this release?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Paul has been on the road, is on the road with Brittany Howard. They're just wrapping up a European run. So this fall, Concurrents will go back to Canada. We're going to play Montreal, and we're going to debut in Toronto. That's going to be a lot of fun. The Bop Stop in Cleveland, I think we're reaching as well. And we're going deep down to Miami, where Paul is living these days, at the premier spot down there for jazz. Small room, but really rocking. It's called Lanyap in Miami, Florida. We're going to do two nights there. And then back to Nashville to premiere at the Frist Center Museum, which is going to be really, really happening too. So not exactly in your neck of the woods, but Twin Cities Jazz Festival. We'd love to play there. We'd love to come back to the Dakota. Thank you, Sean, for putting the spotlight on music that is timeless and also music that is fresh and now. You're moving the needle in an important way. And I want to tell everybody listening right there, make sure to put your money where your ears are, because you're hearing music here that you just can't get anywhere else.
Greg Bryant, we love you. Thank you so much, and congratulations on the new record. I hope you have a beautiful rest of your day, my friend.
My man. Thank you, Sean.